Durkheim's Suicide in the Zombie Apocalypse by Anna S. Mueller, Seth Abruton, and Melissa Osborne. There's little doubt that massive upheavals within societies can be profoundly disturbing. And when it comes to upheaval, a zombie apocalypse is a pretty damn disturbing prospect. With the rise of shows like The Walking Dead, many of us have had ample time to consider how we would respond to the fall of humanity. Perhaps we hope to be among the resilient, who skillfully adapt to our changing circumstances and form alliances with other reasonable humans. But not everyone can cope with the demise of society. Indeed, suicide is a recurrent theme in apocalyptic entertainment. The first season of The Walking Dead concludes with a double suicide at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, when the last remaining scientist rigs the building to explode and tries to compel his companions to join him in group suicide. One character, Andrea, gets it, sobbing, "You know it's over. There's nothing left. There's nothing left." This idea that when there's nothing left of formal society, suicide becomes a more salient option, is prominent in many imaginations of the apocalypse or other profound social upheavals. Following the election of Donald Trump, for instance, the media was awash with stories about increased calls to suicide hotlines. Indeed, the demise of society provides a unique opportunity to examine why a functional society matters to our sense of security and well-being. A Classic Explained. Sociology's beloved Emile Durkheim, in his foundational classic, Suicide, provides impressive guidance towards understanding why the end of the world goes hand in hand with suicidal despair. Durkheim argued that people cling to life more resolutely when they belong to a group they love, which prevents their feeling personal troubles so deeply. Like most contemporary sociologists, Durkheim saw human life as inseparable from the social web with which we live and felt that to dissolve the web would be akin to destroying the self. Of course, not in a physical and biological sense, but in a more terrifying way, akin to leaving the physical biological self floating through outer space, isolated, directionless, profoundly lost. Durkheim saw this insight so clearly because the landscape in which he wrote Suicide shared many characteristics with apocalyptic worlds. Modernization, urbanization, and democratization seemed to be irreversibly altering the traditional, small, close-knit version of society that provided most humans, from birth to death, with strong social bonds and clear moral codes. Instead of zombies, the anonymity of densely populated cities, their endless source of pleasure and pain, and extreme cultural diversity represented the terrifying opposite of bucolic life. Durkheim, and doubtless others, wondered where humans would find social support and sense of purpose. Durkheim leveraged two concepts to describe the changes he observed in society: social integration and moral regulation. Durkheim conceptualized social integration as the structure of social relationships surrounding an individual in their social groups or society at large. Social integration matters as it provides social support for individuals. Moral regulation captures the guidance that a group of or society's culture provides individuals through shared values, norms, etc., regarding what they should do and who they should be. Durkheim theorized that modern societies could, in turn, generate two ideal types of suicides, egoistic and animic. Egoistic suicide, he posited, occurs when societies provide insufficient levels of integration, while animic suicide occurs when societies lack moral regulation. Many of Durkheim's early insights into egoistic and animic suicide have held up to empirical verification. Research has shown that social relationships serve as an important source of biological, psychological, and social support, and reciprocal obligations that anchor individuals to something greater than themselves, thereby promoting mental health. Social groups also serve as the very well from which we develop and maintain a sense of who we are, how we feel about who we are, and who we see ourselves becoming, all things that matter to well-being. Durkheim's limitations. Despite the novelty of Durkheim's insights, there are some limitations to his approach to suicide that warrant attention. First, Durkheim provided little guidance regarding how to group
how group-level phenomena, integration, and regulation trickle down to affect individual suicide risk. Second, he largely neglected how membership in multiple, sometimes embedded social groups can shape people's vulnerability to suicide, a limitation Bernice Pescadillo has pointed out in her research. Third, Durkheim emphasized his typology of suicides as egoistic and anemic in a way which we believe distracts from the main point, that society matters. We should focus on characterizing social groups as lacking integration or regulation, rather than characterizing an individual suicide as egoistic or anemic. Labeling a suicide as egoistic or anemic oversimplifies motives and forces a false dichotomy between egoism and anemy. Through integration and regulation represent two distinct, meaningful sides of social groups. They often overlap, a point Peter Biermann has previously made. Where we find low integration, we're also likely to find low regulation. Even Durkheim ultimately acknowledges this. This is not to say that motives do not matter, but sociology's strength is in linking human action to meaningful social groups. These limitations have impacted the potential of sociology to contribute to understanding suicide, but they are by no means fatal flaws. Our purpose is to leverage the ideal type case of the zombie apocalypse to improve sociological theory. Thus, we contemplate the first season of Walking Dead and contrast the cases of Edwin Jenner, the aforementioned last scientist of the CDC, and Rick Grimes, the show's lead protagonist, thereby improving Durkheim's theory and identifying some of the mechanisms that link the group level to the individual. Rick Grimes, integrated despite the disintegration of society. Viewers meet Rick at the first episode of The Walking Dead, emerging from a coma only to discover that society has disintegrated in his absence. The terror-inducing scenes of society that we see through Rick's eyes reach their fevered peak when we're shown a highway littered with abandoned cars strewn about in unfamiliar chaos. The city of Atlanta smolders in the distance. When Rick reaches the urban core, it's empty, save for the zombies. The fact that society has fallen is inescapable in a major American city reduced to a ghost town. Rick's world is characterized at the macro-social level by a profound and inescapable lack of social integration and moral regulation. Ultimately, Rick manages to join forces with a small group of citizens that conveniently include his wife, son, and best friend. A group in desperate need of a strong and wise leader who is also comfortable with guns and violence. Rick, previously sheriff's deputy, easily assumes this role and quickly adapts to life in the new chaotic social disorder. Rick thus finds satisfying social integration in small group that manages to make up for the disintegration in the macro societal level. This small group integration also satisfies many of Rick's needs. He has the love of his wife and child. He has friends, new and old, and has a sense of purpose. Rick's pre-zombie apocalyptic identity as sheriff's deputy remains virtually intact as he continues to be a force of leadership and security for his group. This continuity is particularly apparent in Rick's clothing. He puts on a sheriff's uniform with his iconic hat as soon as he can. With his new group, Rick is able to shed quickly the feelings of profound loneliness, grief, and hopelessness that he expressed as he emerged from the hospital. Instead, he expresses pride, a sense of purpose and self-worth built on the expanded but still similar identity. From Rick's case, we can modify Durkheimian theory by proposing Preposition 1A. Identity verification and attachment to social groups translate social integration and moral regulation at the group level into mental health outcomes for individuals. Proposition 1B. The more disintegrative processes affect micro-level social organization, the more important identity verification and attachment to smaller integrated groups are for protection. Dr. Edwin Jenner, a case of egoistic, anemic suicide. Dr. Edwin Jenner's life after the apocalypse is quite different. Even after the fall of society, Edwin remains integrated in a small group. If the early days of the apocalypse, Edwin is sealed within the CDC with fellow scientists searching for a cure to the fever that turns people into zombies. Slowly, though, members of the scientific team die, many by suicide, and abandon the project, until only Edwin and his brilliant scientist wife are left. When Edwin's wife dies of the zombie fever, he is left profoundly alone. Still, Edwin perseveres. He believes that he's society's last hope, and he promised his wife he would continue the quest for a cure. That hope dies when a lab accident destroys his last samples of zombie flesh. Edwin laments to the computer recording his activities. The TS-19 samples are gone. The tragedy of their loss cannot be overstated. I don't even know why I'm talking to you. I bet there isn't a single son of a bitch out there that's still listening. Fine. I think tomorrow I'm going to blow my brains out. At this point, Edwin has lost his salient social ties, society at large, his group at the CDC, and his family. Their loss also destroys his sense of self, which is bound up within his identities as a scientist and husband. These losses generate intense hopelessness and grief, and also shame and guilt at his failure to find a cure. When he ultimately takes his own life, Edwin's death represents an ideal type case of egoistic, anemic suicide. He has no social relationships, and he perceives his life as meaningless. Hence, we offer a somewhat converse proposition based on Edwin's case. Proposition 2. The more identity attachments lost in the face of rapid disintegrative social change, the weaker the sources for positive effect will be, and therefore the greater vulnerability to suicide. Contrasting cases, new theory. In sum, the cases of Edwin and Rick provide insights into possible mechanisms linking the group level to the individual and highlight the importance of looking at multiple sources of social integration, from small groups to society as a whole. Regarding the former, these characters' experiences illustrate how important a person's identity is in shaping their emotional reactions to the characteristics of social groups, particularly in the face of social upheaval. Rick's identity is reaffirmed in the new social disorder, while Edwin's is lost. Edwin feels fear, shame, grief, hopelessness, while Rick is able to temper his fear of the chaos with feelings of love, pride, and purpose. If Edwin's losses were not so closely tied to his identities, perhaps he too could have weathered the apocalypse. But Rick has family and a small society. Edwin ultimately has neither. This zombie apocalypse thought experiment suggests several refinements for Durkheim's theory and some propositions for future research to test. First, our analysis suggests that integration and regulation are best operationalized at the group level, not the individual level. Thus, we advocate for ditching sociology's focus on egoistic versus animic suicide and encourage the examination of how integration and regulation at the group level shape suicide risk. Second, it makes more empirical sense to consider integration and regulation as co-producing protection or vulnerabilities to suicide. That is, one should not be emphasized over the other. Third, we argue that integration and regulation are linked to suicide risk through a person's identity. Incorporating how identity moderates the experience of integration and regulation and social groups is crucial. A reimagined Durkheimian perspective helps us better understand how feelings about the self and whether life is worth living are in part dependent upon the characteristics of social groups. Ultimately, Durkheim and the zombie apocalypse illustrate how sociology and specifically sociological theory matters to understanding suicide and mental health more generally. Theory, for many sociologists and sociology students, was a tedious class about whether great white men are sociology or the history of social thought. Our theory classes are often taught at a pace far too fast for most students to become comfortable with mobilizing theory in their own work. This inaccessibility produces an image of theory as a nebulous thing that takes up space in literature reviews, but is really only meant for a particular class of sociologists. The best sociology, though, is work that engages, challenges, and ultimately shifts theory through the negotiation of the relationship between an empirical case and one or more theoretical frameworks. Empirical work that fails to fully articulate these theoretical implications misses the opportunity to work through illustration of potentially generalizable principles. Here we've shown how one might begin to do this. The key is choosing an empirical case to use in thinking through a theory, to quote John Levy Martin. Durkheim used the case of suicide to elaborate his thoughts on social integration and moral regulation. We picked zombies, not only because we enjoy thinking through the complexities of what social collapse could mean, or even because we like watching The Walking Dead, but also because Rick Grimes and Edwin Jenner help us think through who survives in the face of low social integration and low regulation and why. While we drew on the strengths of Durkheim for guidance, we also used our case, along with the insights from other theories and existing research, to improve Durkheim. Our formal theoretical propositions now need to be operationalized, refined, or rejected, all in the service of building our shared understanding of the role of society in suicide and mental health. Theory, when done, should provide guidance and inspiration for future research. The hardest part of this process is usually finding a case that lets you think through the gap in literature. You must read widely, across subfields of sociology and even into disciplines, but be somewhat agnostic about your favorite theoretical and methodological approaches. Look at the limitations of past studies and for elements of a theory that are confusing and not well fleshed out. Indeed, this is what inspired our initial desire to reformulate Durkheim. The world is full of pressing social problems in need of sociological imagination, but a surprising number of them receive little sociological attention. Suicide is one such example. Go boldly where few of your colleagues have gone, taking our repertoire and a zombie apocalypse preparation kit with you, of course.